united forever in friendship and labor. Our mighty republics will ever endure. The great Soviet Union will live through the ages, the dream of a people, their fortress secure. Long live our Soviet motherland, built by the people's mighty hand. Long live her people, united and free, strong in a friendship tried by fire. Long may our crimson flag inspire, shining in glory.
America!
American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men, and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Friday, November 18th, 2005. And you guessed it, this would be Newsreel, the WOG Global Sitrep for core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rand Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening, you are too. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal. You can get to my live journal currently by going to Sean_Kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free radio broadcast that can be heard on Rand Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Osprey Radio.info, Extreme Radio Tampa, and SRN1. And you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way that you see fit. So right off the top, let's get into a little bit of feedback. Hi, Sean. I'm from the Netherlands, and I can tell you weed does work. Does work on what? Come to Amsterdam and I'll show you. Ooh, that's a tempting one. We're real relaxed over here. I've actually been to Amsterdam, and Amsterdam is a very interesting city. It's the only city in the world I've ever been to where you can buy postcards that you can't send anybody. We're real relaxed over here. Nice show. Keep up the work. Greets from the Netherlands. So it's handy that I've got other friends in the Netherlands now who listen to the show. Glad you like the show. Glad it's entertaining. And hope that, if you're smoking a lot of weed over there, that you are actually, able to stay employed and stuff like that. Because that is a problem when you're a big stoner. It's like, you don't really seem to be getting many places. Mind you, there are people out there who smoke marijuana who have, done stuff with their life. Carl Sagan used to smoke marijuana. He was a big astronomer guy. Which, are you really surprised by that, that Carl Sagan used to smoke up? I mean, looking through a telescope, looking at the stars, being an astronomer type. It's a pretty interesting lifestyle to have, I guess. Kind of lends itself well to the whole marijuana thing. I don't know. Now, I got another piece of feedback here that's a bit of a story, so I'll get through it. Dear Sean, as I walk home from work due to the cold temperatures, I usually walk through my local mall. Yeah, no, I don't know how many people I know actually do this. They'll actually, kind of ferry through different shops and stuff like that to try to shelter themselves from the cold. It reminds me of stuff from Tales from the After Now. But anyway, yesterday was my 3-year anniversary. Good for you. And I left work early at about 3:30 p.m. As I passed The Hot Tropic store, I saw some cool-looking counterculture kids. They looked like we're right out of a Gorillaz music video. Leaving the store, not really thinking too much about them, I continued shopping for the evening's festivities. Candles, chocolates, chocolate-covered cherries, and the like.
Ooh.
As I had finished my last purchase, I was leaving the mall and heading across the parking lot. I saw some jocks giving kids the counterculture... Giving kids... Sorry, let me try that again. I saw some jock kids, say the little sporty kids, giving the counterculture kids a hard time. Well, I say kids, but they were 16, 18. And then calling them names and saying that they were going to kick their asses and whatnot. So one of the counterculture kids, Jeremy, said, "Fine, let's go. I'm sick of your shit." So they started walking towards each other. Now, this is... See, now people made a choice here. See, that's what happens. They're like, "I'm sick of being made fun of, so now we are going to turn to violence." So for the record, the counterculture kid said, "Fine, we're going to kick your ass." So now we have a teenage fight going on. I put my stuff under a bench by the doors and ran over to the fray. Pulled the jock kid off of Jeremy, who was getting beat, and did the old hockey move when you pull a shirt over the kids over their head and hold them to the ground. I told him to knock that shit off now or I'd call the cops. And everybody backed up. Some of the kids on both sides just ran off. So it's like, "Oh, let's fight." Arrgh! This guy got in the middle of it. So I talked to Jeremy and the jock kid and asked him why he was so mad at Jeremy. He said it's because he's a freak and worships Satan, which is kind of interesting. So I said, "So, is that hurting you?" And he said, "No, but it's wrong. It's wrong to worship Satan." Okay, well, you know, that's his take on this. This is classic. Like, what do you say to that? "No, but it's wrong." Okay, you're obviously crazy. Then you're in league with Satan, too. So I let him up and told him that it's wrong, that it's more wrong and more evil to attack someone just because he chooses to be different. So the long and the short of it was that this jock didn't like Jeremy because he looked punk gothic. And Jeremy said that he didn't worship Satan, but was trying to stay out of his way until he had finally had enough. So we talked for a while longer. I told them both to listen to Rand Radio and let the jock go and watched him get in his car and drive off. And then I told Jeremy to get his parents and make sure that the law and make the law aware of the attack so he could press charges if he wants, if he wanted. Well, it seems to me that that was pretty much the guy was yelling at him, and Jeremy was the one who decided that he wanted to go at the kid. Now, in the eyes of the law, that's a mutual consensual fight. So, well, that's the way it works up here. I don't know how it works down there. I also gave him my contact information if he needed it for a court witness, but he said he wouldn't do that unless he gets hit by him again. So I started to walk home, and I was also there when Jeremy's friends drove by and stopped me on the street, gave me back my stuff I'd left in the mall and forgot. Well, that's kind of cool. I thanked them and reminded them to listen to Rant Radio again, and they said that they would. So, Sean, at some high school in Utah, you should have 5, hopefully 12 more listeners. Peace and wall grease. Grundle Boy. P.S. Keep up the good fight. I would encourage everyone, that if you see something happening and you know what's wrong, you have a moral responsibility to do something about it. It's in the Declaration of Independence. Try it for just a week. Consequences be damned. Now, this is an interesting interesting thing you did here. Now, this is classic stuff. Good for you, by the way. I mean, you're doing what you believe in. And I'm not trying to pick a fight with you here. Okay, but what you said here was, you know, if you see something that you know is wrong, then you have a moral responsibility to do something about it. Now, that's a dangerous statement because, you see, the jocks thought that the Satan-worshipping kid was doing something wrong, and he felt that he had a moral responsibility to do something about it. So it was his morality going, "No, I'm not going to let these kids worship Satan in my neighborhood. Blah, you freaks, I hate you. You all worship Satan, you suck, blah, 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 blah." And it's very interesting when people are, like, young and stupid like this that they, you know, they'll just, you know, pick sides and decide that we need an enemy to strike out at. I don't know why this is. Perhaps it's human nature. I'm not too sure. And also, you know, you did choose, Grundle Boy, to get involved with this here. You know what I mean? You ran over there and there was a fight happening in the parking lot. I mean, it's nice. I don't know how it is, how things work in Utah, but, you know, you never know what could happen in a situation like that. A fight could be happening. One kid produces a knife. You wind up getting stuck. You know, so you had to make a call. And you know, you had to trust your own judgment because you know your own neighborhood and stuff like that. But I think that people in New York would probably have responded differently to that situation than people in Utah. Just a thought. Just a thought. That's if they're not all Mormons. So it's kind of an interesting ploy. But I do applaud you for doing what you feel is right and standing up and at least doing something. I mean, at least you did something. There's something to be said for, you know, at least standing up and taking action on some level. So I applaud Grundle Boy. And I would, you know, I think that people should get involved in what is happening, but they need to be very aware of what can possibly go wrong. I mean, everyone likes to think of getting involved in the scenario, and they look at the best case scenario of what could happen if everything goes right, but they don't really happen of what all the things that could happen if things start going wrong. Not that you should be a chicken shit, but you should definitely be aware. Being aware of your surroundings and tactically aware. You just have to be aware of these things. And speaking of being tactically aware, in weaponry news. Now, weapons are sort of an interesting thing to me. I find that humans, generally, we're a warlike species. We seem to like war. We do it very, very well. And it seems that we've got some new weapons that have come on the market. I like to follow weapons because you know what? Well, I'm not afraid to say I like guns. I can't say I'm bad there. I kind of have a belief that war is probably going to be always happening on this planet until we have a dominant culture which will, you know, sweep all the other cultures under the rug or amalgamate them in some way. Just kind of like that Borg thing, you know, we are the Borg, prepare to be assimilated, you know, that kind of an idea. Unless we all kind of do that in one culture or another, there's always going to be war. It's just kind of the way things is. Now, the article goes on to say, war is hell, but it's worse when the Marines bring their new urban combat weapon, the SMWA. That's what it's called, S-M-A-W-N-E, Smwanee, the old Smwanee River, which may be why they're not talking about it much. This version of the standard USMC shoulder-mounted assault weapon, but with a new warhead described as an N-E, novel explosive, is a thermobaric mixture which ignites the air, producing a shockwave of unparalleled destructive power, especially against buildings. A post-action report from Iraq describes the effect of the weapon. Quote, one unit disintegrated a large one-story masonry-type building with one round from 100 meters. They were extremely impressed. Elsewhere, it is described by one Marine as an awesome piece of ordnance. It proved highly effective in the battle for Fallujah. This from the Marine Corps Gazette, July edition. SMA gunners became expert at determining which wall to shoot to cause the collapse and crush the insurgents fortified inside interior rooms. Now, yeah, because trying to ferret people out of well-fortified houses, 10 guys can hold off 300, so it's very, very, very difficult if they know what they're doing. The NE round is supposed to be capable of going through a brick wall, but in a practice, gunners had to fire through a window to make a hole with an anti-tank rocket, again, from the Marine Corps Gazette. Now, I'm not surprised by that. You know, usually people would, ferreting people out of amphibia was just disgusting. Due to lack of penetrating power, the NE round, we found that our assault men had to first fire a dual-purpose rocket in order to create a hole in a wall or building. This blast was immediately followed by an NE round that would incinerate the target or literally level the structure. The rationale for this approach was straightforward. Marines could employ blast weapons prior to entering the house that become pillboxes, not homes. The economic cost of house replacement is not comparable to American lives. All battalions adopted blast techniques appropriate for entering a bunker, assuming you did not know the bunker was manned. The manufacturers, Tally, make bold use of its track record with a brochure headlined Thermobaric Urban Destruction. The small NE has only been produced for the U.S. Marine Corps, though there are reports that some were borrowed by other units, which, yeah, no doubt. However, there are also proposals on the table that thousands of obsolete M72 Laws could be retrofitted with thermobaric warheads, making them into more effective urban combat tools. That's a 10-pound rocket that the guy can carry on his pack, which will flatten a house. Ooh, fucking raw. Gotta like that. Now, personally, having done some amphibia training myself, I would have to say I'd be pretty excited to have these things with me. And people go, Sean, I can't believe that you're into these particular weapons. Well, yes. You know, it is unfortunate that, you know, they are at war, and there's a lot of politics involved in that war. But while you're there, let's keep your soldiers alive. And one of the best ways to keep your soldiers alive is to, well, kill the enemy. So I know that maybe I don't really like the nature of this war that is going on. I would like to get my troops out of there and all the rest of it. I think it'd be great to bring the troops home, yada, yada, yada. But that said, on the sharp end of the spear here, okay, when you're on the ground and you're in a region and there's a war going on, make no mistake, I do not care about enemy casualties. I don't give a shit. I give a very much a shit about our allies' casualties. So, you know, yeah, if you can level an entire city and not take a loss, fucking rights. Sounds good to me. I don't like civilian losses. Don't like them. Think they're kind of messy and not really, you know, professional for soldiers to do that. So this is why a weapon like this is excellent. Why is this a weapon excellent? Because if you weren't using something like this, you'd have to call in artillery or fast air. And when you call in artillery and fast air, there's a large margin for error. You could drop the bombs in the wrong place. But this is a point-and-shoot solution against enemies that have, you know, have entered into the whole war. So you can generally, you know, sort this place out. Think it's great. Good piece of tech to have kicking around. Now, another piece of tech, which has been cited more and more and more, and this is something that, you know, kind of is an interesting to follow the SMOA any stuff with. Maybe those of us out UFO hunting should be packing these things. But in UFO news, they have become legendary in UFO circles. Huge, silent-running flying triangles. Now, everybody's heard of these things. They're large black triangles flying around. Have been seen by ground observers creeping through the sky, low and slow, near cities quietly cruising over highways. Now, there's a lot of reports of these things. You know, by pretty credible people. The National Institute for Discovery of Science, NIDS, has a catalog of the triangle sightings sifting through combined databases that took a hard look at the mystery craft. Based in Las Vegas, Nevada, NIDS is a privately funded science institute with a strong research focus on aerial phenomena. The results of their study have just been released to lead some unnerving, still puzzling conclusions. The study finds out the United States is currently experiencing a wave of flying triangle sightings that may have been intensified in the 1990s, especially towards the latter part of the 1990s. The wave continues. The flying triangles are being openly deployed over and near population centers, including in the vicinity of major interstate highways. Now, this is very interesting stuff. A key NIDS conclusion is that the actions of these triangular craft do not conform to previous patterns of covert deployment of unacknowledged aircraft. Furthermore, neither the agenda nor the origin of the flying triangles are currently known. Now, these are more and more showing up. Now, it's either all bullshit, which is possible. I suppose they're all lying. You know, there's somebody, you know, pulling the wool over our eyes. We don't know what the fuck it is. Or it's not all bullshit, in which case we've got flying triangles flying around, which means either A, they're of human origin, meaning they come from the planet, or B, they are not from human origin. This is very, very concerning. Now, whether or not they're human origin or not, I don't know if anybody's fired on these things or tried to take one down or what's going on, but it's very interesting stuff. In the years between 1990 and 2004, I've seen an intense wave of flying triangle aircraft, the study observed. Sifting through reports by hundreds of eyewitnesses, the NIDS assessment states that the behavior of the vehicles does not appear consistent with the covert deployment of advanced DOD, U.S. Department of Defense aircraft. Rather, it is consistent with a routine and open deployment of advanced DOD aircraft, or B, the routine and open deployment of an aircraft owned and operated by non-DOD personnel. So, interesting. So they're saying that it is probably government-owned. This is what they're suggesting here. The implications of the latter possibility are disturbing, especially during the post-9/11 era, where the United States airspace is extremely heavily guarded and monitored, the NIDS study explains. In support of option A, there's a much greater need for surveillance in the United States in post-9/11 era, and it's certainly conceivable that the deployment of low-altitude surveillance platforms is routine and open. According to Tom Keller, NIDS administrator, a newly completed quasi-meta-analysis of flying triangles melds three major U.S. databases, NIDS, the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, and data collected by independent researcher Larry Hatch, the creator and owner of one of the largest, most comprehensive UFO databases in the world. Keller said the analysis indicate that the deployment of flying triangles is open, not covert, and involves low-flying, brightly lit aircraft routinely deployed over populated areas, including cities and interstate highways. Now, this is an interesting thing. We have hundreds, possibly thousands of people saying that they've seen large flying craft, but we don't believe them. We don't believe them. Why? Because it goes against what we know to be true. Now, this is where we get to the meat and potatoes of this whole thing. In the post-9/11 world, but we're not really sure about what happened with 9/11, are we? So there's the accepted reality of what is true, right? Well, we need this now because of 9/11. Wait now, you got a house of cards here. You're building your cards on a foundation of sand. So we're not really sure what's going on with 9/11. We're not sure 9/11 was really caused by terrorists at all. There's a lot of conspiracy talk going on about 9/11. A lot. And some of it is pretty well, shall we say, well-founded. I don't know, man. I don't know. There's a lot of crazy shit going on for 9/11. Now, that said, let's suppose they did this and it was a hoax. Well, obviously, the United States is at war with a lot of people right now. So what do you do? What do you do about that? Well, you're going to have to... Well, when you're at war with a bunch of different people, you're going to need to have extra surveillance. But do I think that this is something that they would be doing? Do I think it's of human origin? No, I'm not too sure. I do believe it's of human origin. I'd say it's probably more likely it's of alien origin. If it is of alien origin, then we got a problem. But, you know, we're getting into the really scary UFO world out there. Now, I wonder how many people actually believe that if there are UFOs, first of all, we got to determine whether or not the UFOs are alien. And if we are believing that, I think it would be pretty standard to believe that the UFOs probably would have made contact with the United States government. And if they had done that, the United States government wouldn't have said anything because, oh, yeah, by the way, there's these aliens and they could take out our planet anytime we want to. Sorry, the Bible's bullshit. You know, I mean, that would be the death of a culture. So they'd want to try to keep things pretty low key, you know, and wait for the right time to subject the world to the concept of alien contact. And I think that that's why, you know, 2012, everything seems to be pivoting around there, a lot of things building up. And when the world winds up in a total state of chaos, these aliens are going to go, by the way, we're all here to be friendly and cure diseases and help you and blah, blah, blah. And in that case, you know, we probably wind up selling ourselves out. But on the upswing, at least if aliens came in and did that, we might wind up getting, you know, StarCraft technology. That'd be hot. Even if we wound up being slaves, we could rise up against them and, you know, maybe get the StarCraft technology. It's an interesting idea. Anyway, moving along with the science fiction sort of bent, here's some real-life sci-fi coming down the pipe. In Chrome Identity News, Hitachi has announced yesterday a new mirror that functions as a computer display. It will be available for purchase in Japan on September 30th, I assume of next year. Or unless that was of this year. I've got a year on that. It combines a half mirror and a diffusion film to directly display digital information, text, photos, video, TV shows, websites, flash movies, etc., on a mirror service using an LCD screen projector. This technology, called Mirography, also integrates sensors, RFID readers, and barcode readers, cameras, etc. So the mirror can automatically respond when people are around, and listen to this one here, and personalize digital contents based upon their sensed identities. Sensed identities. Interesting term there. Sensed identity. What is your sensed identity? Interesting. The mirography device could potentially be used at restaurants, bars and hotels, train stations, airports, sport clubs, show windows, and other design functions. So it's very, very interesting stuff to have this, mirography device. I wonder what happens with all the sensors that these mirography devices use. You know, is all that data going somewhere? You can probably bank on it. Probably being inserted somewhere. We need to find out where it's going to go or whatever, but we'll see what happens there. In internet news, as UN officials meet tomorrow in Tanzania to plot strategies for a new worldwide internet governance structure, this is the whole idea of the UN taking over the internet, an issue brief from the 350,000 member National Taxpayers Union warns that such schemes could choke political freedoms and soak taxpayers. Now, this is all in regards to, who controls the web. After so many conspiracy hoaxes over the year, there is now a serious, ominous effort to replace the efficient and adaptable nonprofit entity guiding the internet with a new UN-sponsored agency, said the NTU Government Affairs Manager and Issue Brief author Christina Rasmussen. Rasmussen's study traces the push for government-dominated online environment to the working group of the Internet Governance, WGIG, created by the UN in response to detractors of the current U.S.-based International Corporation for Sign Names and Numbers, ICANN. As the author notes, the advertised reasons for this proposal, increased access and receiving global input, seem to be masking some less noble motives and outcomes. And what are these less noble motives and outcomes? Well, for one thing, there's censorship. This is what happens if the UN takes over. Despite having made a declaration of support for the freedom of speech, many WGIG members come from nations that severely curtail its right. China, for example, has one of the most restrictive and sophisticated internet control mechanisms in the world. just as other UN bodies have been co-opted by non-democratic governments, an international internet commission chaired by China might not be far off, Rasmussen observed. So China might, you know, have a lot more say in what goes on your internet. Taxes. That's another thing. Taxes. Since the internet's infancy, the UN has crafted detailed proposals to tax online traffic. Rasmussen calculates that one 1999 plan for a bit tax, adjusted for today's numbers for internet users, would raise $12 trillion a year, roughly equal to America's gross domestic product. Even less ambitious money-raising models, such as independent Switzerland-based Digital Solidarity Fund, could feasibly be transformed into future collections of compulsory internet taxes and fees. So, you know, tax the internet, choke it out. There's also bureaucratic corruption. Given recent oil-for-food scandals, UN-style internet agencies would present the inherent risk of giving ruling members of regimes in developing worlds shiny new computers rather than furnishing the poor with internet access, Rasmussen says. Although the U.S. State Department and more recently federal lawmakers are moving to oppose the UN internet takeover, and ICANN officials are advocating privatizing, the author contends that vigorous opposition to WGIG's plans from taxpayers around the world is vital. Opposition to the plan. Manipulating internet content through an internationalized tax-funded structure may be an attractive outcome for politicians seeking to suppress dissent and prop up financially ailing bureaucracies, but not for friends of economic and information freedom, Rasmussen concluded. The concept of international internet governance should be rejected, and the proposals of the WGIG report move to where they belong, in the trash bin of every policymaker's computer. So some pretty heavy stuff heating up with the old internet there. I guess they're saying the UN wants to take over, and when that happens, well, no more freedom for everyone. I wonder how long, you know, the internet was going to really stay the Wild West anyway. How long before those of us who know how to access news groups and actually communicate off the grid, how long before we're all labeled terrorists? How long before that happens? Now, in MPAA FUD news, now this is the Motion Picture Association of America. Now, this is a fantastic piece of fear, uncertainty of doubt, also known as FUD, that I'm about to feed you here. You ready for this one? This is some good stuff here. The MPAA pirated DVDs, according to the MPAA, pirated DVDs are the new drug on the streets. Can you believe this? In a hyper-bolicious announcement released this morning, the Motion Picture Association of America claims pirated DVDs have become, quote, the new drug on the street. This is from their Washington release. A fatal car chase on November 10 between convicted felon in Virginia wanted by authorities on several criminal charges, including cocaine possession, yielded hundreds of pirated CDs and DVDs in the man's trunk, giving rise to a new trend of traded drug. This is what they're saying, a traded drug, according to the Motion Picture Association of America, Incorporated's Dennis Supik. A lot of people we were arresting had drug conviction backgrounds. Actually, what they said was, this is the new drug on the street, said Supik, the MPAA field investigator who assists local law enforcement in anti-piracy raids. Now, why the MPAA has a person walking around with local police is completely out of my, you know, I can't understand that. But anyway, I mean, why not just have some corporate heads out there, too? You know, busting people, kicking in some doors, slap them around, leave them in a room with them for a little while. The new drug on the street, hey, if you reduce that to an acronym, it spells NDOTS, which sounds like some kind of acid or something now that you mention it. So new drug on the street is the pirated DVDs, according to the MPAA. Talk about bullshit. But, you know, that's what you get when you've got the money. And the MPAA most definitely has the money. Now, in core political news, Democrats asked the U.S. Attorney General Wednesday to investigate whether top executives from big oil companies lied to Congress when they said their computers did not take part in Vice President Dick Cheney's energy task force. Did they lie? Democrats and environmental groups have fought unsuccessfully to find out which energy industry executives met privately with Cheney's group in 2001 as prepared a broad plan friendly to oil industry interests. The vinyl metal group said they were mostly excluded from the discussion. So, you know, it's like when they make up this group, they invite the oil companies and no environmental groups. At a Senate hearing last week on record oil profits, Democratic Senator Frank Lattenberg of New Jersey asked five executives, did your company or any representatives in your company participate in Vice President Cheney's energy force in 2001? Each executive answered the question in the negative. So, isn't that interesting? No, we weren't there. No, we didn't meet with anyone. And it's kind of cool that during all this major crisis, when I guess all this oil is a shortage, these guys are turning record profits. Interesting. However, the Washington Post reported Wednesday that a White House document showed some companies did, in fact, meet with the task force. It said the document showed officials from ExxonMobil Corp, Kokono, Shell Oil, and BP America Incorporated, whose executives testified in last week's Senate hearing, met with Cheney's aides. Oh, so they lied to Congress. However, the Government Accountability Office has found that Chevron was one of several companies that gave recommendations to the task force, the Post reported. In a letter to the Attorney General, Lattenberg demanded an investigation, saying the new information cast doubt on the veracity of some of these executives' statements. Providing false testimony to Congress is punishable by up to 5 years in prison, Lattenberg said. So I wonder now if we're going to see any, corporate executive types go to jail. I don't think we will. Why? Because, well, they don't have the money. It's kind of funny when you realize that quite a lot of the noble ideas of our culture really, don't seem to exist in the really real world. This is one of the things that I really have noticed in the last year of doing this show. There's a lot of folks, like even, guys like PETA and that, okay? PETA, recently snuck in some cameras to a Colonel Sanders slaughterhouse, you know what I mean? And they got all this really graphic footage. I know people stomping on chickens and kicking them around and all this kind of jazz before they murdered them, you know what I'm saying? And they throw that out there and so that they can, generate more interest and la 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 and fight the cause and all the rest of it. And the interesting thing about PETA is that they're really kind of sensationalist in their own right because, what if they won? What if they won? Seriously, what if PETA won? What if, total animal liberation, this totally, unrealistic goal they're going for here. But let's say they got it. What do you think would happen next? Do you think PETA would disband? No. PETA is about money. That's what it's about. They're just like any of these groups that show you horrible pictures of starving children all over the world and then stand there with their hand out, guilting you into giving them your money. The same thing goes for PETA, Greenpeace, a lot of these organizations that sit there. They're there because they need a job. They're there because, I'm sure they can hide on the moral high ground of, we're doing it for the animals. We're doing it for the No, you're not. No, you're not. Maybe originally you started doing it for the animals. And you're playing to the idea that people like animals, and so therefore they don't like suffering. But realistically, let's cut the bullshit. You're doing this for money. Most things that happen in the world today happen because of one thing and one thing only. Money. If 9/11 was a hoax, why was it a hoax? What's the motive there? Well, they needed a reason to get into the Middle East and to fuck that shit up. Why did they need a reason to get into the Middle East? Well, because of the oil interest that's over there, because the whole fucking country runs on oil. And they need a very good sales plan to sell to the American people so that they can get over there to get a hold of the oil. Now, it begs the question, is fighting for oil bad? Every single war is fought over resources. Every single one. Now, there's a lot of people who are going to make money on this. There's a lot of people that are over there, saying, well, we got Halliburton and all these guys making big, 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 big dollars. Lots of cronies making big bucks over the oil wars. And now the oil companies, they're lying to Congress, la, 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 la. Yeah, we got some pretty high corruption going on here. But what exactly is going to happen about it? We got all us whiners, all of us, all of you, me included in that equation. Okay, we're all whining. I sit here and I repeat to you stories that are sent to me from all over the web. So we in the Peanut Gallery, we sit here and we all talk and make a lot of fucking noise about what's going on in the world. But what are we doing about it? What are you doing about it? Well, what can we do, Sean? What can we do? I don't know. Everybody's different. Maybe those of us out there could get involved in some level. Maybe those of us out there could, I don't know, if you're involved politically, That's one thing you could do. I mean, you could think about where you're spending your money, I suppose. Think about how often you eat at McDonald's, perhaps. Not saying you need to go vegetarian right now. Maybe even going vegetarian is a bad idea. I don't know, but I think perhaps you should educate yourself. You have to become accountable and stop giving in to political fads, no matter what those political fads may be. Everyone is accountable for your own financial position in the world. That's not a concept. That's a reality. If you don't think that you're responsible for where you are financially right now, I got news for you. Nobody else gives a shit. Maybe if you've got relatives, you know, who think that, you know, that they're going to look after you to some level. But, you know, communism didn't work. The Soviet Union fell apart because of man's natural greed. And there's all these folks that want to solve the world's problems with political agendas, but it won't work because man is a savage beast. That's just the truth of the situation. We're a bunch of bags of shit who will do whatever it takes to get ahead and get ahead of everyone else. The urge to be great and the sexual urge. These are the two things that motivate all, well, males, and arguably the entire human race, according to Sigmund Freud. So, that paints a pretty fucking bleak picture. Now, when you paint a bleak picture like that, that's an ugly thing to have to look at, and this is why religion is so fucking popular. This is why Disney makes as many home movies as it does, because it sells you a lie that people are actually genuinely very nice, blah, 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 and provided that they're not a necessity, people are nice. You know, I've long said that people are three meals away from total fucking anarchy. New Orleans proved that. So, you know, what would happen if the electricity and the water was shut off to some other major cities? What do you suppose would happen in New York? Hell, we already saw what happened in L.A., wasn't so long ago we had riots breaking out down there. Paris right now, lots of riots going on over there. And people with certain political ideologies would like to say, well, that's the government's fault. No, it's the fault of the people who are rioting. If you stand up and you start throwing rocks, it's because you want to destroy things. You want to burn down the world and reduce everything back to the Stone Age because you feel that the Stone Age would be better than your current political situation. So it's better for everyone to be shit versus, you know, one or two people being above other people who are shit. This is the logic, which I'm not too sure I agree with. You know, there's a lot of people out there who claim to be, you know, morally superior and ethically superior and all this kind of jazz, and it's all holier than thou. But realistically, it's such is not the case. We don't like the fact that the world is one the way it is. We don't like the fact that money really does make the world go round. We don't like that. It's horrible. Fuck. Money makes the world go round. God damn it. But you know what? Versus what? If it wasn't for the cash, everyone would be forced to do everything at gunpoint, wouldn't they? And it could be argued that everyone is forced to do everything at gunpoint because if you don't obey the laws, eventually the police come, and the police have these funny things called guns. So it's all power. Everything has to do with power. Now, you're not going to be able to beat this. You need to understand that. You cannot totally just, you know, on your own now, a group or a unit or whatever, you know, a massive political movement could sweep the country and change that. But even still, man's basic human nature of greed will dominate people's search for power. It's unfortunate, but altruism is largely a lie. Hate to say it, sucks, but it's the truth. Even to some degree myself. Well, Sean, hang on now. You're doing this news show, right? Yeah, I'm making a lot of noise. I'm a big whiner over here, making a lot of noise. Begging for stuff to talk about, apparently. So you look at that and you say, okay, well, then you're altruistic, aren't you? Not so. I accept donations. There's cash coming into me. Nobody does nothing for nothing, right? I give this show away. That's altruistic, right? Rant Media is altruistic. We give our stuff away. It's free for everyone. Well, I don't run Rant Media. Sumerian runs Rant Media. And Sumerian has a lot of different views on a lot of different things than I do. But realistically, something's got to keep those servers going. It's got to be donated bandwidth. If people decided not to donate that and run the altruistic route, I think that, I think Rant Radio would probably shut down unless there was someone willing to put money into it. So money does enter the equation on some level. There's always cash involved. It's kind of unfortunate, but there it is. Then, of course, you run into, you know, love and all that kind of jazz where people, you know, the fan love and all that crap. It's out there. It's important. You know, there's people who care genuinely. But, you know, it runs into a massive psychological sort of thing. So where am I going with this? Where am I going with this? What I'm trying to say here, what I'm trying to get at, there are a lot of people that would try to hose you and tell you that there's more important things, the greater good, the greater cause of it all, and all that kind of stuff. And if you choose things to be more important than you, you know, you say, well, you know, getting arrested for this particular cause, I mean, I'll do that. I'll do that. I'll fuck up the rest of my life to get arrested for this cause. But you better make really damn certain that it's not going to fuck up the rest of your life. You got to think long term with a lot of these things. I hate seeing these mass arrests where these young kids are getting busted because they follow some Pied Piper out there. I never encourage people to go to protests. I don't do that. Why? Because it's fucking dangerous. People ask me, why did you disband Cult? I disbanded Cult because 9/11 happened and it wasn't funny anymore. It wasn't harmless fun anymore. I saw right away that things were going to get really shitty and people were going to start going to jail, and I don't want people fucking their lives up for something on the internet. You have to keep things in balance. You cannot allow yourself to become an extremist. You owe it to yourself. You have to keep things in focus, for Christ's sakes. Now, it could be argued that I'm an extremist. It could be argued that, you know, Sean, you're a bitter sellout. Look at you talking about money ruling everything. You're a sellout. No, motherfucker, I'm honest. I'm telling you how it is. I'm not happy about it. I don't like it. But I cannot be denied. You know, there's all kinds of guys out there who dance around and talk all this wonderful left-wing bullshit, but I'm here to tell you, at the end of the day, where the fuck is the Soviet Union now? It's gone, and not because they were stupid, it's because of human nature. You have to look after yourself and yours. Friendship is important. Being loyal to your friends is important. Sim and I see things in very, very different lights. I think he's crazy. He thinks I'm crazy, but we're buddies. We're going to look after each other. After he has a complete and total mental collapse due to lack of eating meat, I will be there, the first guy at the hospital with a meat freezy to make sure that he gets nursed back to health, and I'll keep you posted on his condition. But until he falls over dead, we're going to keep going with our, current, you know, sort of dichotomy, left-wing, sort of, I don't know, centralist. You know, Sim can be all extremist and terrorist on his end, which I'm joking, he's not actually a terrorist, but according to SWAT magazine, he's a terrorist. And myself, who's, you know, a highly educated person who's, you know, able to be always giving a very balanced opinion. And if nothing else, what I believe to be the truth, with a generous portion of humor thrown in just for shits and giggles. Anyway, now that I'm done on that particular tirade, let's get on to some toxic alert news. DuPont, arguably one of the great core political satans of the world. Who would have ever thought that DuPont had studies showing the risks of a Teflon-related chemical used to line candy wrappers, pizza boxes, microwave popcorn bags, and hundreds of other food containers, according to internal company documents and a former employee. Oh, you gotta hate it when the disgruntled guys get on the mic, eh? The chemical zonial can rub off the liner and get into food. Once in a person's body, it breaks down into perfluorocationic acid and its salts, known as PFOA, and related chemical used in the making of Teflon-coated cookware. The Environmental Protection Agency has been trying to decide whether to classify PFOA as a likely human carcinogen. The Food and Drug Administration, in a letter released Wednesday evening by DuPont, said it was continuing to monitor the safety of the PFOA chemicals in food. Now, I think this is a nice way for the FDA to say, hey, DuPont, why don't you cut us a check? And we'll make sure this goes away. The DuPont documents were made public Wednesday by the Environmental Working Group, a research and advocacy organization. At the same time, a former DuPont chemical engineer, Glenn Evers, who is taking his life in his own hands, told reporters at a news conference at EWG's office that the company long suppressed its studies on the chemicals. That's according to the guy. They are toxic, Evers said of the PFOA chemicals. They get into human blood. They're also in every one of you, your loved ones, your fellow citizens. Pretty inflammatory stuff for this guy to be saying. From 1981 to 2002, Evers helped DuPont create new products. He lost his job in 2002 in what DuPont described as company restructuring. Evers had a different view. It is my belief DuPont pushed me out because of company, pushed me out of the company because he started raising concerns about the chemical's safety, which is always interesting when these guys do that. So he's like, yeah, I've been poisoning people for years, but now I feel bad about it. Evers said he had decided to talk publicly about the PFOA problem after filing a civil suit against DuPont this month in Delaware court. Wow. Filing suit against DuPont. Hope you got good lawyers. Evers' aim is to mainly to set the record straight about the chemical in his own career, said Herb Furehack, Evers' lawyer. Well, Herb, you're now going to be a famous dude. But Evers said he also hoped to influence the outcome of an EPA hearing later this month and whether DuPont had withheld from the EPA a study of PFOA as possible birth defects. The company could be fined millions of dollars. So it's really simple here. If DuPont thinks that they're guilty, they'll cut the FDA a check and everything will go away. Interesting. Now, children have to be kind of, looked after. Children are important. They are the future. Teach them well. Let them lead the way. But you have to make sure that children are allowed to stay children. Children have to be able to pretend, to grow, to learn. Or do they? Is it a good idea to start in the womb, as a lot of people do in Japan, by playing music and by coaxing them, by imprinting the operating system at an exceptionally early level? Well, a news story centered by Tears of Oblivion here talks about factory children. There is a proposal in Britain here talking about, so will toddlers be taught to speak by state dictate? Will babies of 18 months face exams in reading and writing? Will nursery schools and childminders be competing in league tables? Sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? Yet that was the impression you might have you got from the media reports this week. We were told that two-year-olds will have death by worksheet. Death by worksheet, interesting term when applied to two-year-olds. Under the government's plan to extend the national curriculum from age 5 down to birth. Holy crap. So you are now no longer, from the age of 0 to 5, you're generally allowed to be a child, but now, as soon as you're born, you're into the machine. Journalists, commentators, and newspaper editors, newspaper letter writers, work themselves into a lather of indignation. It was Big Brother, Nanny Blair, Orwellian, and lunacy all rolled into one. A more amusing comment came in a letter to the Daily Telegraph, which asked whether the national curriculum for babies included potty training. Well, what is the truth? Is the government really extending the national curriculum to toddlers? The announcement, which triggered this media frenzy, was a briefing on the new child care bill. This puts into law what parents can expect of high-quality child care and nurseries. During the media briefing at the Department for Education, it emerged that nurseries, playgrounds, childminders will have to follow something called the Early Years Foundation Stage. Now, obviously, this is not going to be just for these folks. They're going to try it here and spawn it out. This is what happens with these things. Remember that from age of 3, children are already covered by the foundation stage of the national curriculum, which came into force 3 years ago. I didn't know that. So they're actually, now it used to be up to 5, now it's just age 3. So the only new bit of the announcement that was proposed affecting children from not to 3. In fact, the government guidance on this has also been around for a couple years. It's called the Birth to 3 Matters. It was a decision to give this guidance legal force on similar lines to national curriculum, which is new and has triggered the furor. So they're trying to enforce these laws. This is interesting. They're going to start early, not too much. And they'll put these laws in and not enforce them, and then they're going to start enforcing the laws. Very, very interesting stuff. Now, in core political town news, this is a disturbing story all on its own. Very, very wild. Back in the 1950s, Hot Springs, New Mexico was renamed Truth or Consequence, New Mexico, after a popular quiz show. During the dot-com boom of 2000, Halfway Oregon agreed to become Half.com for a year. This week, Clark, Texas morphed into Dish in exchange for a decade of free satellite television from the Dish network for the town's 55 homes. Residents in Santana, Idaho, meanwhile, are weighing the pros and cons of changing to SecretSanta.com in Idaho. So they're changing the names of the towns to like .com names and city names. This is absolutely obscene to me. Across the nation, small communities are being courted by large corporations who say renaming a town provides a marketing buzz that can't be bought in television ads. Holy shit. Though some worry about corporate America's increasing influence in local government, many towns seem eager to accept because why? Why? Because they want the money. Again, it's about the money. Would you want to live in Safeway, Kansas? I don't know. It's about the cash. And following what I said earlier about 9/11, it seems that there's more evidence coming up out of this. Brigham Young University physics professor from Brigham Young University, Stephen E. Jones, is the latest credible individual to come forward and assert that the official story of 9/11 differs wildly from the observable facts. Jones appeared on the Alex Jones Show on Friday to discuss a story that refuses to die and one that has again been pushed to the forefront of alternative research. Jones made numerous compelling points on the collapse of both Twin Towers and Building 7. According to Jones, his scientific peers have been very sympathetic to his research and have agreed with his conclusions, which some of which are the three buildings collapsed in their own footprints and did not topple over, something that kind of is fairly, very obvious. This bears the characteristics of a controlled demolition. The central columns were pulverized and the buildings fell in on themselves. Why would Muslim fanatics go to the length of wiring the largest complex of buildings in the world with explosives when a toppling collapse would have caused more damage to Lower Manhattan and killed more people? Very weird. Horizontal puffs of smoke or squibs can be seen popping out floors as collapse engulfs floor-by-floor buildings. Again, this phenomenon atypical of controlled demolition. Molten metal found in the basement of the World Trade Center suggests that the commonly used explosive thermite may be responsible for the collapse. Jones said that buildings not destroyed by explosives would have been insufficient direct energy to produce large quantities of melted metal that was discovered. The molten steel was found 5 days after the collapse on September 16th when the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, used airborne visible infrared imaging spectrometer to locate and measure the site's hotspots. Very interesting stuff. It requires the temperatures of at least 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit to melt steel. Diesel jet fuel does not reach those temperatures, and the fires in the buildings were short-lived. So that did not melt the steel. Firefighter tape recordings prove that only a small pockets of fire were still burning in the buildings seconds before they collapsed. It goes on and on. So clearly, America has been sold a bad bill of goods. Your daily hack today is a do-it-yourself Wi-Fi sniffer for backpack straps. Very, very cool. This enables you to be walking around with your backpack and everything, check your straps and your webbing, to see when you're in a good Wi-Fi spot. Do you have a messenger bag or backpack you use regularly? Do you have a laptop or other device within a Wi-Fi in said bag? Wouldn't it be cool to integrate your Wi-Fi snipping into your bag so you have yet another device on your keychain? So you do not have yet another device on your keychain? Today we'll show you how to take an existing, inexpensive, passive Wi-Fi detector and embed it into a strap of your messenger bag or backpack. And that's today's daily hack. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I will be back on Monday with Samaritan and make sure that you get all the information you need to stay alive. This would be a free broadcast. Well, it's not really free. It's brought to you by donations, and those donations are from 11 one-time donators. 11 people donated one time and said thanks for doing it. 52 continuing subscribers, the backbone of the organization, and with two new subscribers adding themselves to the vertebrae for a total of 65. Thank you very much. I really mean that because, you know what, it gives what I do worth. If you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the Donate tab. And thanks again to everyone for their assistance in gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any of the pertinent stories, please email them to Newsreel. That's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album by Project 44, Look Me in the Eye. I'm going to leave you now with a track from that Project 44 album, a cover of the Depeche Mode song, Personal Jesus. So until Monday, that's what Server said. End of love. Reach out and touch faith.